You're listening to a Share Radio podcast.
Our founding fathers understood trade much better than our current politicians, believe me. George Washington said that the promotion of domestic manufacturing will be among the first consequences to flow from an energetic government. Alexander Hamilton spoke frequently of the expediency of encouraging manufacturing in the United States. And listen to this. The first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, warned that, quote, the abandonment of the protective policy by the American government will produce want and ruin among our people. He understood it much better than our current politicians.
That was Donald Trump addressing the faithful during the US presidential campaign. The promise to create more jobs played well with the crowds, especially in regions hit hard by the decline of their manufacturing industries. In Mr. Trump's world, America can only restore its economic greatness by renegotiating trade accords, which have yielded few, if any, real benefits. To achieve that would mean taking on the likes of China, which the new president-elect claims has abused its position to flood the market with cheap goods. Well, with Mr. Trump now gearing up to take possession of the White House, how is he planning to make America a top manufacturer? And does that mean risking a trade war with China? Well, for more analysis, I'm joined in the studio by Professor John Weeks, who, of course, is Share Radio's regular economics commentator. John, a very good day to you.
Good day to you.
Just listening to that speech, he's evoking history, but is he evoking history as a protectionist or as an advocate of a free trade framework redesigned by him?
Well, that's a key point that's not clear. I think that he has in mind a redesigning the U.S. Trade relationship, though I think he's not exactly clear about it. But the background to it is that this the U.S. government is in a position where if it wasn't Trump's, whoever was president would have to try to rearrange at least the trade arrangements, because the trade deficit with the Chinese has become so enormous. It is over $300 million a year, and that represents over half the U.S. trade deficit. So one country accounts for over half the U.S. trade deficit. That is an unsustainable deficit in the long run, and the long run is getting closer and closer.
Mm. So in that sense, therefore, he does have a point in his criticisms of China. In the past, he's accused China of being a currency manipulator, and of course, China has benefited from that by keeping its currency low, because it means it can sell cheaper goods to the world and the world laps it up.
I think that that's true. I think, too, I don't have a great deal of sympathy with the Chinese government, but I will say that they are responding to an opportunity offered them, in that for the last 30 years, the tendency in U.S. trade policy has been to unilaterally remove trade barriers against the developed countries, particularly. And I think what is motivating that is a shift within the United States from manufacturing to the importance of finance. So you have a rise of a financial sector, which is actually benefiting, or at least taking advantage of the trade deficit. They're the ones that are the intermediaries for the bonds that the Chinese buy to finance the U.S. Deficit. So we have a situation in which the, you might say, balance of economic forces within the United States has been consistent with the development of a trade deficit, but it is inconsistent with the long-run stability of the U.S. economy.
Mm, certainly some form of a game is being played here, because if you dig deep, yes, China does hold a great deal of American paper, and yet it's also been offloading that onto the markets, and it's been lapped up by the Japanese.
Well, that's exactly right. In over the last few months, there has been capital outflow from China. Why that is the case is not entirely clear to me. The speculation is that the financial sector of Japan, of China, is quite unstable and itself in danger having a bankruptcy crisis, and as a result, money is flowing out. And in response to that, the Chinese government has been selling off its U.S. dollar assets in order to try to prop up its currency to prevent it from depreciating. So we have this ironic situation in which China is accused of manipulating its currency, but at the same time, it is preventing it from devaluing. So we have a lot of things going on which are not exactly consistent with each other.
Sure, a tangled picture that Donald Trump is trying to make sense of. But the bottom line is that this is not a situation that has arisen overnight. Isn't the United States, to a certain extent, the author of its own problem because of the open door policy of the mid-1980s, holding out the olive branches to China, trying to work with it, which for geopolitical reasons was a very sound idea in principle, but it's the economic payback that's been detrimental?
Yes, I think that is exactly right. And there are two aspects of it that listeners should understand. One is that the trade deficit with China in 1990 was about $20 billion dollars. And as I said before, is now over 300. At one point, was almost up to $500 billion dollars. When I say China in this context, I'm also including Hong Kong, because it has a substantial trade surplus with the United States too. So that's one thing. And going along with that has been a deregulation and change in laws in the United States that facilitates U.S. companies relocating abroad. So you've had this arrangement in which some of the, at least in the 1990s and early part of this century, some of the goods flowing into the United States from China were actually produced by U.S. companies. Mm. I mean, that is getting to be less and less each year as Chinese companies become more important. So you have this irony in which the U.S. is indeed, or the U.S. government, whether not knowingly or by accident, has created a situation which is becoming unsustainable.
So in principle, what he's actually identified, it is correct. The question is, of course, how is he going to go about doing this? Because he's still assembling his team. But how much tougher will this team be? Because it's also tied in with the politics, because China is a key player. And could the politics really temper what Donald Trump does?
Well, I think that when you look at his team, which you just mentioned, the trade, the person who will be in charge of trade, and also the Secretary of State, are people with rather, you would say, not terribly tight ties to China, closer ties to Russia, perhaps an issue we can get into after the break. Mm. So this means that the policies that Trump would use to foster U.S. manufacturing are not at all clear. What is underlying his promise to bring industry back? Is it a rhetoric to provoke a confrontation with China, or is a confrontation in China derivative from policies to foster manufacturing? That is not clear yet.
Mm. There is some speculation as well that he could empower the executive branch of his office to deal with issues like currency manipulation. Is that viable? And if so, how would it work?
Well, who knows if it's viable? I'm not sure. But I think the president of the United States, while the U.S. has a principle of separation of powers, and into executive, legislative, and the judicial system. In practice, the president has a lot of flexibility. And if the president's party controls the Congress,
which he does,
he has even more flexibility, because the way the president's powers are limited is primarily, well, at least in the short term, is through Congress, and the long term by taking cases to the Supreme Court. But that can take years and years. So it's, if Congress is willing to accept, maybe complain a little bit, but not stop the president from doing things, there are many, many things he could do. Concretely, what would he do with regard to China if he wanted to punish them for unfair trade practices, be it through currency manipulation or whatever it might be? Well, the president could introduce temporary tariffs. There could even have a ban on some imports through the working through the International Trade Commission, which is a nominally independent agency, but has the power to introduce restrictions on trade. And the president himself, through executive action, could could do the same thing. So Trump has instruments. Whether or not, and I think he's quite capable of using them, whether or not he would do that in a systematic way linked to a overall policy, I'm very dubious about. I doubt that he has an overall long-term policy.
But clearly, this is a day of reckoning, if you like, that has been building up for some time. And you could argue that politically, Trump would be a fool to squander the opportunity, because he's got two houses which fall under the control of his party. He's promised the electorate that he will create more jobs, that he will address this imbalance. And at the same time, if he does go down this road, isn't it also an indictment of organisations like the WTO, which stood back and allowed these imbalances to occur?
Well, I think you're exactly right on all counts. First, the Trump, unlike Obama, I think, realizes the importance of acting quickly. It may be acting in an impetuous and ill-advised manner, but he would not do as Obama did, and I think fiddle around trying to find a bipartisan consensus before acting. He has, as you say, he has a majority in both houses of Congress. The chances of either of those going against him on a major issue are very, very slight. And so, therefore, he can use his executive powers, and I think he will use them quickly. And also, I think the Congress would go along with law, many, even if they were outrageous laws that he would suggest dealing with trade. There are a lot of people in the Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, that want to see China punished. Right. And so I think that he would act, and I mean, I think he will act, and he'll act quickly. Whether or not that it will be enough to rekindle manufacturing in the United States, I think the answer is no. There has to be some increase in investment. Perhaps we can talk about that after the break. It's not enough just to introduce protection.
Okay, well, let's hold that thought in terms of what Donald Trump can do to help American manufacturing in a few moments.
The Week's Update.
Yes, it is the Week's Update, and today we're looking ahead really to 2017. Of course, in January, Donald Trump, who at the moment is the US president-elect, takes control of the White House. One of the key points that he raised during his time on the road when he was campaigning for the presidency was that he wanted to make America great and create more manufacturing sector jobs. Of course, the danger there was that he could potentially provoke a trade war with China, which he has blamed for many of America's weaknesses. Now, before the break, we were talking about the use of Mr. Trump's executive powers as president to perhaps confront the Chinese, to force through some of the agreements that he's looking for, bypassing the WTO. But the question, John Weeks, is how China would react to this. Now, there is one school of thought that President Xi Jinping, he could take the talk into action. He talked about a free trade area of the Asia Pacific. So that would be the sort of counterweight if he went ahead with that. And I guess that it would be his way of saying to America, well, if you're not prepared to play ball, that doesn't matter, because I can lock in with some of my nearest neighbours and collectively they're bigger than you, or possibly even bigger. So the deals that I cut with them will perhaps buffer any negatives from you.
Yes, well, I think here at this end of your show, it's perhaps relevant to speculate about what occurred. And I think that there are the first thing principle with Donald Trump is that overall, I don't think it'll be business with you as usual. When you look at his cabinet, when you look at his character, we are not going to see a continuation of past policies. That doesn't mean everything's going to change, but some things are certainly going to change. And I think global alliances are one thing that could likely change and over which the president has a tremendous amount of power. Basically, in foreign policy, the president can't do anything he wants to, but he can certainly do a lot. And there was quite an interesting article in The Guardian yesterday by one of the one of the opinion writers that was speculating about alliance between the United States and Russia. Here you have two authoritarian personalities. They seem to get on. Donald Trump's Secretary of State, who was the head of Exxon, has met the Russian president and evidently, you know, is friendly with him. And so I think it is conceivable that we'll begin to see a U.S.-Russian alliance against a sort of China-Asia-based alliance. I'm not sure where Japan would come in that context, but we already see some of the Asian countries warming up to the Chinese, particularly the Philippines.
That's interesting as well, because would they be willing to give that leadership to the Chinese in such an economic and political forum, given that countries like the Philippines are in verbal conflict with China over island rights, territorial waters, that sort of thing?
Well, I think they are. Of course, Donald Trump looks like, you know, an extremely reasonable man compared to the president of the Philippines, who brags about having personally murdered drug dealers, if indeed they were drug dealers. And the Philippine government has said that it's willing to put those territorial conflicts aside and in its relationship with China. That is not true for Vietnam and Malaysia and some of the other countries. So I think that that's a very fluid situation. Also, Japan and China have conflicts over islands that are much further north. And so it will be no simple task for the Chinese government to construct its own alliance. Nevertheless, it might well be what will begin to occur in 2017 is a development of regional power centers, going back almost to the philosophy of spheres of influence, with the U.S. retaining its sphere of influence in the Western Hemisphere, and with an alliance with Russia, and while China will assert its influence in Asia. And I think its trade proposal, which has been around several years and was explicitly created to be competition with the U.S. Trans-Pacific Partnership, that, I think, is a sphere of influence strategy.
Yeah, and what happens to the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Because, again, we were hearing about on the campaign trail, Donald Trump was very critical of some of these recent trade deals, etc., that had been negotiated. He threatened to unpick them. And interestingly enough, after he won the election, one of the first foreign visitors he had to Trump Tower was the Japanese Prime Minister.
Well, that's true. And I think that Trump is a fickle person, to say the least. And it's very dangerous to predict what he's going to do. But I would be very, very surprised. I'll put it positively. I expect him to prevent both of the major trade deals from occurring, the transatlantic one, TTIP, and the one for the Pacific area.
Yeah.
I think they are dead. I could be wrong. I would be astounded.
But they can't just be killed on the president's word. I mean, there would have to be a substantial amount of unpicking. So how long could that take? Or could he just simply say, that's it, I don't acknowledge them, and he could just walk away just like that?
Well, they would have to be approved by Congress. Both of them, they have yet to be approved by Congress. And I think that the they have to be approved by the Senate. I think the Republican majority, even though it's a very narrow majority, 52-48, is unlikely to challenge him on this issue. Mm. I think that it would have to be a much more basic and perhaps domestic issue before they would challenge
him. John, we have less than a minute left, but very, very briefly, is it possible that in terms of restrictions on China, Donald Trump getting back at the Chinese, if you like, via trade deals, etc., that it could even go to Chinese companies, imposing restrictions on those that want to buy up or indeed buy into American businesses? Could it go to that level very briefly?
I think so, yes. I think that Trump would be prepared to use his executive powers to block Chinese purchases of certain what he would consider to be strategic companies or buy into strategic companies, even though that would conflict with the interest of many financial interests. As you may know, as a last comment, the Koch brothers, some of the wealthiest people in the United States, are very much involved in a trade with China and Walmart, for example. Most of its goods are from China. There are important interests that want to continue trade with China. So I think there will be a conflict.
Sure. So one to look out for. But John, we have to leave it there. That was Professor John Weeks, Share Radio's regular economics commentator, the week's update, in fact, for 2016.